trying to live up to how 2014 worked out for you?
Yeah, well, it was always going to be a big year one way or the other. Fortunately, it turned out in a very positive light and it all went well. But yeah, it was a very busy year, an enjoyable year, obviously, and a great result at the end of it.
Yeah, well, we'll begin. There's so many things to talk about, but we'll begin with the Ryder Cup, I suppose. That was the really, really big one in 2014. Appointed captain, you know, about a couple of years ago now. And you obviously had to put in a lot of effort and preparation for that Ryder Cup, and you certainly got great praise from the players involved as to what preparation you put in. So maybe just tell us briefly how you went about preparing for that Ryder Cup team.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a long story. I, to be honest, I mean, my captaincy didn't start 2 years ago when I was appointed. It was way before that. You know, it was four previous years before that I was a vice captain on two occasions, 2 year, 10 years in each one. So that was 4 years. And then before that, I had semi trophies as well, too. So it was kind of a 6 year apprenticeship, before I took the top job of being captain. So I was kind of formulating and molding views, during that period of time. And, that culminated in, when I got appointed, having a very clear idea as to what I wanted to do, as captain. And then it was just putting the structures in place.
Yeah, what were the main points in your plan at that stage?
Well, I mean, there were so many, but the one thing I didn't want to do was I was very much of the opinion that if it ain't broke, don't fix it, and it wasn't broken, so there was no need to break things up that were working well, and all I wanted to do was kind of move things to another level, you know. Simple things like statistics, before it was done on a pretty basic level. I used to do it myself as a vice captain and bring it to the table when we'd have meetings, and I just have general statistics. But when I became captain, I employed a full-time statistics team of three guys who followed every shot that the players, every player in Europe, started with 50 players, and obviously, you know, over the two-year period, whittled down to the remaining 12. So I had a league table and all of those players and who they were and how they were playing and what their strengths were, what their weaknesses were, and related to each other, had them all in the league table. And then I had a similar analysis done on Gleneagles the last 10 years. We played the Johnny Walker up there, and the guys that had played well in the Johnny Walkers and won, and what did they do particularly well, and what was the examination paper that Gleneagles was going to pose, and what were the areas of the golf course we needed to attack. And you know, based on all that information, I was able to put that together when I was making decisions on pairings and communicating with the players in terms of them preparing for Gleneagles. So that was just one area. And then, you know, other areas like the graphics, the continuity of message was very important. The players, I wanted to keep things simple to a large extent, just bring everything to a new level without necessarily changing it.
You know, that seems fairly, fairly specific and very detailed. Surely it was difficult getting all that information, extracting from all that information, useful information to allow you to pick the team, to pick the pairs. The team, I suppose, was picked by 9 automatic and 3 wildcards, but thereafter, to put the right combination together surely was difficult.
Yeah, it was, but again, I had 6 years of experience with that, of knowing, having played with the players, and also you know, being on tour myself and being vice captain to most of the players before in the past. So I had a clear idea as to who they were and what they did and what their personalities were like. Then adding all the statistical information that I have on top of that and what the examination paper was going to be, i.e. Gleneagles. And then also my own intuition, my own conversations with the players that I catalogued over the 2 years. Every time I had a chat with a player, I'd have a file and I would update that file and form a psychological view as well, too, on the player and who he was with and what kind of partner he would have. And based on all that, you know, which is a huge swell of information, I was able to, you know, make some good choices, I think, in the end, that was proven to be correct. We had a lot of very strong pairings. And it was important, too, as well, too, if, you know, like, for example, Sergio and Rory went out the first day and got beaten. But I had a lot of confidence that was a good pairing. And just because you lose one match in a Ryder Cup doesn't mean that all of a sudden you're a bad pairing. And I had a lot of confidence in that and went with them again the second day when they came through strong. So I had to have conviction in my decision and all the work that I'd done over the previous number of years.
How important is the chemistry between the players, you know, as to how they will perform?
The chemistry is important. That's really what you're trying to do. You're trying to create an environment for the players in order to go out and perform to their height, perform to their best. And it's a very difficult situation to ride a cup compared to other teams. I mean, let's just say, take, for example, Donegal football team or Kilkenny hurling team or Man United or wherever where you want to go. It's very different because, in general, the coaches have those players for a long period of time and on a consistent basis. Whereas a Ryder Cup, you don't. You've over a two-year period of 104 weeks and 103 weeks of those 104, they're playing for themselves as individuals, and then you have to bring them together for that 1 week. You know, you don't have training sessions, you don't have opportunities to get together as a team before the Ryder Cup. So that poses a lot of problems as well too. And it was important that I was aware of that, and I had to manage according to that, knowing that it wasn't going to change.
And do you think, did you get the chemistry right, and did you get the right combination on the pitch to win? You obviously won and won convincingly, but were you happy with how it all panned out as to how you planned it?
I think being a captain is not a perfect science. And as I say, there's a lot of challenges when you only have the players together for that 1 week and you've got one shot at it. It's not like I've got another term as captaincy. And then if it didn't go right the first match, I get it right the second match. Those days are gone. And I knew I had one shot at it. And there was mistakes. There were things that I'd like to have done differently. There was preparation I could have done a little bit more differently. For example, Stephen Gallagher, Ian Poulter partnership the first day. Didn't work, and I still think that was a good partnership, and I still think they were the right guys to play together. But because both of them were picks and came to the party late, if you know what I mean, I wasn't able to give the same attention and the same preparation to both of those players than I did, for example, with Graham McDowell and Victor de Wisson, who were pretty much in the team from kind of 6 months ago. So I had more preparation time for them. But there are all the challenges you're going to have as a captain, and as I say, it's not a perfect science, and I could have done things in a different way. With hindsight, if I'd have known both of them were going to make the team 6 months out, you know, I could have done what I did with, for example, Jamie and Lee as well too, where I was pairing them together in tournaments that they were playing in, so they would get used to each other's games and all that without them knowing that they were going to be partners in the Ryder Cup.
How much different is it playing for yourself compared to playing for a team in a prestigious competition like the Ryder Cup?
It's very different, and it can be very unnerving, and it's a completely different train of thought, very different as a player to adjust to that. And I think the biggest challenge the captain has is to mentally prepare the players for a different dynamic, a very different dynamic when you've got 11 teammates, because as I say, 103 weeks out of 104, they're individuals, they're selfish individuals out doing their own thing. And got their own team around them. And then for that 1 week, they have to come together to play in the Ryder Cup. And it's a real challenge. It's a very different mindset. And, they're the things that I felt I was experienced in. I knew how to get the best out of the players in that particular environment, which was a 1 week out of 104.
Well, you had a good insight into that because you played on three Ryder Cup competitions there, I suppose, unbeaten in singles. And you also, you know, were involved with the Seve Trophy and so on. Virtually unbeaten, is it correct to say, unbeaten in any of those team competitions? So you certainly had a great knowledge from your competitions yourself and being vice-captain.
Yeah, I did. I think I played in 13 team events over my career. And won 12 out of 13. So I've been very lucky and things went well, good teammates around me, and you're right, my winning percentage in a team was very strong. I always enjoyed having teammates around me. For me, it was an easy adjustment going into playing as part of a team, but that's not necessarily the case with every player, and I was aware of that, and I understood there's a lot of challenges. And you know, when you put the European team together, we have even more challenges than America. You know, we have very different cultures. You know, you've Martin Carmel from Germany, for example, and Ian Poulter from London, and Stephen Gallagher from Scotland. You know, you've got all these different cultures and backgrounds and languages and food preferences and senses of humour and all of those things coming together to mould into that 1 week. So there's a huge amount of challenges. And, you know, the key for me was to keep things as simple as possible and to make all of the players feel very comfortable in and around the team, their teammates, and in and around the team environment.
Well, you looked for, I suppose, some help, if that's the right word, from managers of Gaelic football teams, Donegal's Jim McGuinness being one and Dublin's Jim Gavin. What did they bring to the table?
I've known Jim McGuinness for a number of years, large number of years. He's great friends with Dad, and he's been up at the house a number of times. And I've obviously followed Donegal very closely and really, really admired what he did with Donegal and how he kind of revolutionised Gaelic football to a large extent, and how he brought a different dynamic and professionalism to it, and how the guys performed as well too, and how they all bought into what he was saying, and also how he adjusted that over the years as well too. So I've always been a great fan of Jim, and to be honest, in terms of Jim Gavin, I was very careful and conscious of not having my foot in all the camps and being privy. Jimmy Guinness was giving me some information, and I was privy to some good information from him, and I didn't want to then also have the same conversations with Jim Gavin, and then I could have a foot in both camps. I didn't want to be accused of betraying the information, so I was very coy with that. But I did call Jim Gavin after Donegal beat them this year. I was more interested in speaking to Dublin after the loss than I was Donegal. You know, obviously Jim McGuinness and Donegal did it well and had won, but I was interested in Dublin going in there as strong favourites to play Donegal, and obviously didn't work out for them. And I just wanted to have a good probably 45 minutes on the phone with Jim Gavin as to, you know, going in as favourites, how did he approach it, and what were the mistakes and all those kind of things. And he was very honest and open with me, and that was important for me because we were going to face a similar thing in 3 or 4 weeks' time, which was to play the Ryder Cup as favourites. So that's why Jim Gavin was a big help.
Mm-hmm. So they obviously were of some assistance to you in your thought process for that Ryder Cup.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's a lot to be learned from Gaelic football, and I think there's a lot of correlations between the Ryder Cup and Gaelic football, and I think I referred to it quite a bit over the last number of years. And you know, the idea of playing for the jersey and playing for your county and playing for your people, I thought is very relevant to Ryder Cup. It's just different on a different scale. You know, you grow up in the bottom of Italy and you're aspiring to hopefully play for Italy one day. And then when you play for Italy, you aspire to play for Europe in the Ryder Cup. And it's a similar thing if you're in Donegal. If you're, you know, in Letterkenny, you grow up to aspire to play for Donegal and then, you know, move on to playing in All-Ireland. So it comes from representing your own people and then growing up into a bigger environment and very similar to a Ryder Cup. Obviously, Ryder Cup's on a different level and a different sport, but there's still that connection with where you're from and the country that you're from.
Well, with your skill set now, would you see yourself maybe being a benefit to a county team here in Ireland?
I don't think so, no. I don't think I know enough of the Gaelic football for that, to be honest. I think it's on a different level. I don't know enough about it. I've got lots of other things going on, but I still have a huge interest in Gaelic football and in hurling as well too. And I watch it and listen to the interviews afterwards and watch the tactics and all that, and I'm intrigued with the management, and not just of Dublin and Donegal, but you know, Brian Cody, Kilkenny hurling team as well too, and Mickey Hart. I've always been a fan of his in Tyrone over the years as well too, and what he's done and how he's brought Tyrone to winning All-Irelands as well too. So I'm just a great fan of sport in general.
Yeah, well, you played Gaelic football to a quite high level before you got injured. Did you not win a Dublin Minor medal?
No, I didn't. No, that's a myth. No, I didn't. I didn't play for minor for Dublin. I was born on the wrong day. I was born on the 16th of December, and I was always 2 weeks overage for
right.
Intercounty, but underage for club level, which I always felt was crazy. And I had a very successful club career with Ballyboden, and I ended up playing a little bit of senior football and hurling for them before I broke my knee when I was 19. And that was only then that I started to turn my attention to golf.
Well, you did so well in that Ryder Cup, obviously, that you attracted the attention of, golf for the Olympics. And you're now Irish manager of the Olympic Games teams, for Rio in 2016. Were you delighted to get that call to say you were the man?
Yeah, again, it's great to be able to represent your country. And obviously, the Olympics is a whole new dynamic compared to the Ryder Cup. Ryder Cup, in some instances, was a little bit easier because I'd been involved, as I said before, as you know, over a 4-year period as vice captain, and before that, Sevi Trophy captains as well too. So I kind of knew what I was doing. I had 5 years of experience, had 6 years experience before I committed a job. Whereas the Olympics is new for everybody. Olympics golf hasn't been in the Olympics since nearly 100 years ago. So this is a whole new ball game for all of us, not just the players, me as well too. So I'll probably go out to Rio maybe once or twice next year, and then probably another once or twice before the Olympics in 2016, with a view to getting to know the golf course and the examination paper that is, and communicating that with the players and getting them prepared and being on top of all the logistics and all the other issues that go with the Olympics. Is a massive showcase of sport and accommodation, traveling, but most importantly, obviously the examination paper that the new golf course is going to pose is still under construction at the moment. It won't be ready for another 4 or 5 months, and then I'll go out and hopefully play it towards the end of the year myself and get some information on it.
Mm-hmm. You have a strong team, hopefully, at the time. If you're looking at it now, you know, you've got players of the calibre of Rory McIlroy, Graham McDowell, Shane Lowry, all in the top 50. And that new sensation, I suppose, in the ladies' section, Stephanie Meadows. So a strong hand as it stands.
Yeah, exactly. As it stands right now, it's a strong hand. Who's to know what will happen in 2 years' time? But safe to say, I think we'll have a pretty strong team. But all the best players in the world are going to be playing there. And, you know, as everybody can see, it's very hard to win a golf tournament. And this will be no different. It'll be very hard to win a gold medal, but we'll certainly give it our best shot, and we'll have a very strong team, whoever those two may be.
Yes, 72 hole stroke play, isn't it?
It is, yes, 72 hole stroke play. And the winner wins the gold medal individually, and also wins the first country as well too. So it's very similar to, say, the 100 meters final, where you might have 3 or 4 Jamaicans in the final. But you know, if Usain Bolt wins, he wins the gold medal not just for himself, but for Jamaica as well too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I suppose as a result of doing so well in the Ryder Cup, you got another award, then a fairly prestigious award, Coach of the Year at the BBC Sports Personality of the Year. Is that one that you perhaps expected to pick up?
You never expect to pick these things up. It was a nice honour, but I mean, I walked away from that night, which was a great night, and it was great for me to win the honour, but I was incredibly disappointed that Rory hadn't won the individual. I think it was really wrong, considering the year that he's had, arguably the greatest year a European golfer's ever had, for him not to have won Sports Person of the Year. I thought was a real disappointment, and a disappointment for golf as well too.
Well, the question is, what does he have to do to win it?
Well, exactly. I don't think he can have. I read a piece recently in one of the articles where that statistically he had the most successful year a European has ever had anywhere in the world on the golf course, and for him not to win the Sports Person of the Year is a big disappointment. Not just for him, for golf as well too, but. Anyway, when it goes to a public vote, you know, anything can happen, and that's what happened.
Would the fact that he decided to compete for Ireland in the Olympics be a factor, maybe?
I don't think so, no. I don't think so. He's from Northern Ireland, and, you know, there's been Northern Ireland people have won it before. Barry McGuigan has won it before, where he boxed for Ireland in the Olympics and went on to win the BBC Personality of the Year award in the past. So I don't think that was a factor at all. It was just one of those things that went to a public vote, and a lot of people obviously like motor racing, and they all dialed in and voted for Lewis Hamilton, and he became the winner. And you know, there's an argument for him as well too, for what he won. But you know, speaking with my golf goggles on and being involved in the sport of golf, you know, Rory's achievement was, as I say, the best any European has ever had, never mind a British or Irish player.
Mm-hmm. Well, like, nearer home, you come to Donegal, I suppose, as often as you can, have played their golf courses, and I suppose a big honour for Rosa Penna in that their Senior Scratch Cup is going to be a World Amateur Golf Ranking points for 2015, so that's a great accolade.
It is, yeah. It's a great accolade for Donegal. Puts Rosa Penna on the map, and rightly so. It was one of my favourite courses to play. And I think you've had some great winners up there in the past. I think Rory has won it there in the past. And it's all very sophisticated now, the world rankings. Those world rankings for amateurs weren't around when I was playing. But it just shows you how professional we are in Ireland as well, too, the amateur scene, not just the senior professional scene, but the amateur scene is extremely professionally and well run by the GUI.
And I suppose it's important as well that these players come through the system, because you know you've got a great crop at the moment at the top level, but you want to have a line coming through after them.
Yeah, you do. And I think there's good investment at grassroots level, which is always very important. And you have that at the moment. But, you know, the standard, the leap up to professional golf is so high. You know, and unless you're playing off a kind of a plus four, a plus five handicap, you're not really at the level, you know. So winning scratch cups and all that is great. It's the consistency you're looking for. And I see a lot of guys, you know, who turn professional and maybe not good enough to turn professional. And, you know, if you can cut your teeth in the Irish amateur scene and be the absolute dominant amateur player in Ireland, well, that to me gives you credibility to have a cut at the professional game. But you really have to reach those top echelons if you want to give yourself the best opportunity.
I suppose it's important to say that you did do that, winning the Irish Amateur Championship, South of Ireland Championship, and selected then for the Britain and Ireland Walker Cup team. So I suppose that's the level you have to be to have a hope of doing well in the professional game.
Yeah, I think so. And if you look at the guys who have been successful, Irish guys over the last kind of decade or two, you know, we've all dominated the Irish amateur scene in our time and in our era, and I think that's the kind of that's the guiding mark that I would look for in terms of amateur career, where you should have a go at being a professional at, is if, are you the dominant player in Ireland? Are you one of the top two or three dominant players in Ireland at that particular time? Because it's a tough business, a professional business, and I see a lot of guys not just falling off the pedestal of trying to be a professional golfer, but, you know, as humans as well too, the confidence gets knocked as well too, and nobody likes to see that, because it's a really tough game. It's a really tough game and a tough business to be traveling around the world, and there's so many quality players all around the world who are trying to make it as well too, and very few do.
Well, you're involved in golf design as well. As you're a busy man, how do you get time to play golf, and do you intend playing much this coming season?
Yeah, I've a lot of irons in the fire in different areas, all things that I enjoy. I'll play about 15 events this year, which is kind of a half schedule. I'm fully exempt on tour for the next 2 years. I'm 48 now, just turned 48, so I think I'm the second oldest guy still on tour, Miguel Jimenez being the eldest. So I'm still keen. I still enjoy playing. I obviously haven't played a whole lot the last 2 years when I was captain, but I'll have a little bit more opportunity to play in the next 2 years, and try to pick the golf courses that suit me now. You know, I'm not one of the bigger hitters on tour, and it's important. You know, we play so many big, long, wide-open golf courses where the bigger hitters have a huge advantage, and I'm going to try and choose courses where big hitting is not necessarily such a big advantage, and that I can try and compete. So I have that, and then I enjoy. We've got three golf courses on the go at the moment in terms of course design that I'm enjoying, and I've got a fellow in Dublin, Joe Bedford, who kind of runs that business, and I oversee it, and I'm kind of the visionary for it, and he puts things in place, and it's been fun. It's one of my passions is designing golf courses, and I'm a real traditionalist. I love to see golf courses, you know, simple and straightforward, and very traditional. I don't like to see these big, wide open golf courses. I'm very much into the old style golf courses.
You helped out with Portsallan Golf Club. You know, it's getting great reviews as well. So, Donegal courses, are they on a par with what you're used to playing, even on the professional scene?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't even need to be on a par, to be honest. And I think a lot of people made that mistake. You know, don't design a golf course for me or somebody of my standard, because I don't pay the bills. It's the members day in, day out who pay the bills, the guys who want to go there and play it. And if you make a golf course too difficult that only the top professionals can play, well, then the guy who comes up every day is not going to come back to repeat business. So I'm very much of the view that a golf course should be fun. It shouldn't be too difficult. And once you play, you know, you should feel, God, that was great. I want to come back tomorrow and see if I can shoot a better score. So I'm very much on those views. And I like simplicity. I think aesthetically it has to look good. It has to look pleasing to the eye. And it has to be fair. There's nothing worse than thinking you hit a good shot and then all of a sudden it hits a mound that was put there, or a bunker that was put out of view, and you get round the corner and the ball's in the bunker. So I try to keep things as simple and straightforward in any of the designs that I make.
Well, Paul, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Appreciate your time. You're a busy man, and continued success, that's all one can say, and hopefully you will bring through your captaincy a medal home from the Olympics in 2016.
Thanks. Yeah, might as well. We'll be trying for that, all right, sure. We'll be leaving no stone unturned in terms of preparing the players for that, and Thank you, and I wish everybody a happy new year and a prosperous and healthy new year in 2015.
And